Text 51551. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, Alison Keating joins us now without Ray O'Neill. Alison is our resident psychologist. And the reason she's here on her own today is because she has a new book. It's All Too Much. Good afternoon, Alison.
Hi.
Was this stressful?
Yes. You bet it was.
How many children do you have?
I have three.
Three, yes. Yeah. And they're of a minding age.
Well, yeah. And I mean, to be honest, like, aren't all kids. Like, the older they get, there's more things.
Yeah, but eventually they become adults.
We're not there yet.
You're not there yet. The main theme is anxiety.
Yes.
Right. Now, I just want to talk to you a bit about anxiety first before we get into the minutiae of the book. So at what stage over the last 20 years did somebody who was a bit of a worrier become somebody who suffered from anxiety? Or what happened? Because anxiety was a word that was seldom or rarely used.
Yeah. It was there, though.
It was there, of course.
It was there, yeah.
I suppose the question is there, worrying about things, and then is there clinical anxiety?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah,
well, just talk to us a bit about that.
Like everything, time is very important. So if you worry about things, but I think it's really interesting what you say there, because a lot of people would have classified themselves as, I'm a bit of a worrier. And that kind of covered it all. Possibly there was some anxiety there. So it's not good to be worrying all of the time. So when we look at like generalized anxiety disorder, it's that kind of generalized anxiety. So it's not even specific to something. The question I think is, what impact is it having on my life? Am I functioning okay? And I suppose for me, the thing I see, Ray, actually is a lot of high functioning anxiety. So what we celebrate and reward within society actually is doing a lot of damage.
Right.
Right. So I know there's a lot of talk about anxiety. It has always been there. And I suppose I would like not just for there to be a language around it, but for people to actually be able to identify, oh, that's interesting. I am actually people pleasing, and to understand that that's the fawn response.
Okay. Now, before we get into
those details,
I just wanted to talk a little bit more about anxiety. I'm wondering, has the word, its effectiveness, been diluted?
Because
I'd imagine if somebody's listening and they suffer from clinical anxiety, so they've been diagnosed and it's debilitating.
It is debilitating.
It must really annoy them and frustrate them when they hear somebody saying, you know, I'm suffering with anxiety, and really they're just a bit of a worrier.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, as you said, the word is, how are you functioning? Are you sleeping okay? Are you kind of able to eat well? How are you getting on in your job? But again, I suppose I would be careful with that one, because sometimes I see that they're very high performers.
Right.
And actually the person sitting in front of me, they're really struggling, because actually they're seen as the confident one.
So this is the person who comes into your clinic.
Yeah.
And they're seeking help. Mm. And if they're highly functioning and they're suffering from anxiety, that's a big step for them, isn't
it? It's a
it,
massive
then?
Step.
Because it's very vulnerable position to place yourself in.
And you know what's interesting, like, with more kind of generalized anxiety, what I actually find really tricky is that actually often goes more untreated for a longer period of time, because you just go through periods and you go, oh, that was just a rough patch, now I'm okay again. But it starts to erode at your sense of self. You really begin to doubt who you are as a person. It's a real impact on your self-esteem and your identity. However, when there's panic attacks, that's often more what actually brings people into therapy, because in a kind of an acute situation and it feels like it comes out of nowhere, it's so shocking. Like, honestly, most people have come to me, they've already gone to A&E before and thinking they were having a heart attack, and I'm very glad that they've been medically checked out, and they're nearly upset when someone says, oh, this is a panic attack, and they're like, no, please check again, and they've had everything checked. But that's so debilitating, but it actually helps the person sometimes seek help, whereas the person who's experiencing more of that generalized anxiety, I think they go years without treatment sometimes.
Right. So it's sort of at a low level, but it's affecting them.
Oh, yeah.
You point out a lot in the book that, I suppose, never in the history of mankind have there been more things to make us anxious. Mm. You know, that you talk about a toxic environment, and that people aren't to blame. It's the environment that's to blame.
I think it's really important. And like, you know, there's a lot of talk about self-care. And again, sometimes I feel like in general, we hear people say, well, what self-care are you doing? And I think it's really important for us to step back and go, it's not just myself. when I look around and I see people and they're genuinely overwhelmed, I think it's really important for people to actually genuinely understand I'm in trouble here. I'm actually really overwhelmed. I'm really irritable. I call them the three I's. I'm really irritable, I'm intolerant, and I'm impatient. And I think this is where it goes under the radar a bit again, Ray. The people, it's so normalised in our society to say, oh, hi, how are you? God, I'm grand, I'm wrecked, I'm tired, I'm busy.
Busy, busy.
And it's the same old crap. But our environment, I don't think our brains are set up to actually be able to cope with what we're actually, you know, like literally it's an information overload all day long. And we do actually have a lot to do. Like, I mean, you looked at my inbox, you'd probably cry. Like, it's ridiculous. But it's not just a case of being able to step back and be able to kind of go, do you know what, I'm going to take an hour here. Mm. The whole book is actually about recognising I need to actually bring in some more everyday kind of joy.
And you think that in order to move forward, that we have to understand what's going on in our bodies.
Yes.
And I've been reading a lot over the last few years, and everybody cites the vagus nerve, which is the longest nerve. It goes from the brain stem, the bottom of the brain, right down through, touches on our heart and into our digestive system.
Yeah.
And it's a feedback loop. So the whole thing is connected. Or this is the one that connects everything.
Yes.
And you, in the first few chapters, you explain how this works. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that comes up over and over again, and you expand it to four F's as opposed to two F's, but the one we talk about most, the two we talk about most often is the fight or flight thing. So our ancestors, their bodies were built to run away from bison. That's oversimplification, but that's it. And now we live in a world where we're constantly running away from bisons, but they're not. It's just getting the children to, you know, GAA or paying a bill at the end of the week. And our body reacts the same way as our ancestors' bodies would have worked.
It does.
And what happens then?
So we go into survival mode when actually the threat most times is perceived. And we're like literally an email comes in and it's got urgent on it. And you know, you have that kind of instant feeling of, oh my God, what next? Or if someone says, can we have a word? You instantly think I'm in trouble. And these sound minor. And I suppose sometimes I find in therapy people like, God, I feel even embarrassed bringing these things to you because it feels like first world problems. But when I look at the statistics for health, like the first world is actually in trouble, in specifically for our physical health and our mental health. So I just want people to kind of have a better, it's like an inner GPS. So for anyone that knows me, I have absolutely zero sense of direction. And I thought to myself, wouldn't it be really good when you're feeling lost or overwhelmed to have the ability to have something really practical that you could actually figure out, well, this is where I am at the moment. I am feeling overwhelmed. And I think that's a word people can kind of connect with, or I feel really burnt out, or I just don't feel like myself. And everyone knows what their normal is. And then to recognise that without any kind of emotion of I shouldn't feel like this, because I find a lot of people say to me, I should be happy, I have this, I have that, I have the other. And we dismiss it, we silver line within society. So I think it's about going, I'm actually feeling overwhelmed, how I'd like to be. And everyone says to me, I'd like to be kind of calm and peaceful. And I actually think that's too far, to be quite honest. And I think it's just, that's why I said it's about finding, you know, the joy of enough. And I think our expectations are through the roof on everything. If we look at the calendar of the year, any shop, anytime you go into the shop, like, you know, it's either it's Halloween or it's Christmas, or like we are constantly under this pressure. So that's why I want people to know that, yes, anxiety, there are kind of obviously biological, you can be predisposed to it. You may have actually seen it within your own family and that becomes your norm. But it also is societal. You know, people are really struggling with the cost of living. They're really struggling trying to manage jobs. That every time I see people and they're like, I've been given this project, but I've been given now four others as well. Like the level of pressure upon people, I think, is very, very high.
Yeah. So I think a theme for me from the book was regaining some sort of control. So by having this internal GPS of your emotions and your feelings and how your body reacts, that you know what's going on there.
Yes.
And you can sort of pause. You use the word pause a lot. You can pause. You can do little exercises like rubbing your or putting your wrists under cold water or doing that breathing, which I do a lot. You know, it depends. Some people do the 4-4-4. I do the 7-11. So you breathe in for 7, then you breathe out for 11. And that has a physical effect that calms you.
You instantly send a signal to your brain.
Aha.
That you're safe.
And that's why we're talking about the vagus nerve.
Yes.
Because by doing that breathing, it slows down your heart rate, and that sends this sort of feedback telling your brain
that you're safe. And,
yes.
And when we're in survival mode, we don't think we're safe. And, you know, like our body physiologically responds. So we might feel like, you know, the thoughts are going faster, and you can actually feel like literally the adrenaline pumping through your body and your heart's beating faster. So I want people to think about it as a SOS switch. So when you're in that kind of state of survival, that you just, without any judgment, go, okay, I feel under threat at the moment, but I actually want to get back to safety. Now, what can I actually do? Like one thing. And I think of it on a ladder. So say you're having a panic attack and it's a 10. I say, well, what can you do to get to 9? And sometimes it's as simple as in that moment, just taking the breath. And for people to actually know that they actually have that capacity. I want people to know that if you can bring yourself into that state of kind of anxiety, you can also bring yourself back from it, but in a very kind of compassionate way. So I talk about the 3 C's, and they're really, really helpful. So when we get curious as to why we've reacted in a certain way, rather than going, I should not have acted like that. And say we're having an argument with someone, like often they're like, God, you totally overreacted there. And maybe you did. But if we don't ever kind of connect in with curiosity and go, I did actually really react strongly, what is going on there?
Mm-hmm. And that's where past experiences come in.
Yes.
And you mentioned trauma with a big T and trauma with a small T. And trauma's a word that's been bandied about an awful lot. So explain that to us. So the trauma from our past, if we have some, that obviously is there constantly.
Yeah.
And you're adding all this stressful world on top of that.
Yeah.
So there's no surprise then that people have panic attacks.
Exactly. And what we're looking at is the nervous system. And I mean, you know, when we think about what we're looking in this book is the science of safety. That's what it is. It's polyvagal theory. And I don't necessarily want people to completely understand that, because it's actually really complicated. And yet the practices of how to actually soothe your nervous system and how to actually get into co-regulation with other people is a skill that I would love everyone to actually have. And as it's a very new theory, really, it's only 20 years. It's not a case of why didn't we know this before? Because, well, we didn't. But now we actually do. And I think we're at a very interesting juncture in time, that if we know how to do these practices, and actually when we're in a state of overwhelm going, okay, that's really interesting, and get curious and then challenge it and go, actually, that brought up something for me when I was a kid. And then you identify it.
Yeah.
And then you bring in some compassion that you can actually go, well, what can I actually do about it next? And to see that there's no judgment in it. Whereas I think what we're missing sometimes is we're just always like flying, run to the next thing.
And part of that probably is, and you, which is a great analogy from your mother's gardening. You talk about deadheading, and that's when you take a weed up, but you don't take its roots up. So if we deadhead our emotions, we're not dealing with the root cause of it.
Yeah.
And we oftentimes try to numb it, and it could be through shopping, it could be by staying busy, it could be alcohol, it could be screen time and all those things. And I suppose we have control over those things. And alcohol gets a mention. And you're saying that there's a strong connection between alcohol and panic attacks.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Big time. To be honest, a lot of times people have been drinking the night before when they've had their first panic attack. And I mean, it's not called a fear for nothing. I love Irish people. We have an amazing way with language, and it does create that sense of fear and anxiety. So like, it's just good to question. And again, there's no shame in it, but just to question, I suppose, how we socialize and what we consider fun, and to kind of step back and just question, I wonder if, how do I feel actually when I wake up the next day after having a couple of drinks? So again, it's just to kind of open up the possibility that we can socialize in different ways. Like, it could be through exercise or meeting up with friends or doing something that you really enjoy. But I think just this one way of, you know, entertaining ourselves, we've got to challenge that.
Isn't it terrible though that, you know, I don't know how it has happened, and maybe it's the drinks industry that have duped us all, that they haven't said this in as many words, but there is a sense that part of self-care is to have a drink.
Oh yeah.
Wine o'clock.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
The Mammy deserves
o'clock.
It.
Oh my God.
Mammy's little helper.
Yeah. It's kind of the mammy's little helper of this generation, isn't it? So I think.
But that's against everything that's in your book there.
Yeah.
I would think.
I think it's just to kind of again, not to be waggy finger with yourself, but just to question, is alcohol the first thing that I go to self-soothe if I've had a hard day?
Mm-hmm.
And just to kind of ask yourself, are there other things I could add in? And I do think that nature plays a massive role in it. Just literally, you know, say you've had a stressful day, maybe just take a little walk around the block. Just like 10 minutes. And that's, I want people to know that it's a small stuff.
And you know, we know this one as well, that comparison is the thief of joy. And you're looking to create some everyday joy. And this thing that we have in our pockets, the smartphone, it's untold. It's doing untold damage, I think.
Yeah.
We've no idea. It'll be hundreds, maybe 50, 100 years' time before we realise the damage that smartphones have done to this generation.
I think it's just that we, like our everyday life, the impact of us trying to keep up with what is unsustainable. And I just think it's about how we're living our lives is unsustainable. How we're treating the environment is unsustainable. And I'm just asking people to kind of question, I'm actually having a good adulthood. Like, people will often very quickly say to me in therapy, I had a happy childhood. They're very, very quick to tell me that.
Right.
And I mean, I don't even expect them to have a fully happy childhood either, because I also think that's not normal. So it's these expectations we have that we should be happy all the time. I don't believe that.
Yeah, happy is
happy. Like it's just not, you know.
Because it's unattainable, you say it.
It's completely unattainable.
It's a lie.
It is a lie, and it's a lie we've been sold. So I think standing back from that and saying, it's not that you want a happy adulthood, but are you enjoying your adulthood? And what are you actually doing to kind of live a life that feels more aligned to your values? If you're dragging yourself into a job that you absolutely hate, but you still have to pay your mortgage, I know that. It's just to kind of stand back and have a little question. Yeah. Am I exhausted all of the time? Do I feel really completely overwhelmed? Maybe it's normal. And that's what I see around me. But this norm of hyperproductivity and pushing ourselves and hustle. And that's why I want to come in kind of like a psychological disruptor. I want to disrupt how we're living our lives. And I want to create a soft revolution where it's not just push all the time. Like, sometimes I talk about rest in the book. It's just about sometimes sitting down and having a cup of tea.
Yeah. Sitting with the silence.
Yes.
No is an important word as well.
No is an important and difficult word. And, you know, again, we hear boundaries, you know, thrown about all the time, but it's one of the hardest things to actually do and put in place. So I think it's about cultivating a relationship that you can revisit again and again and again, you know, and people will push against those boundaries. So say you've said no to something and they're like, oh my God, what's wrong with you today? This is not like you, but you always do it. And I nearly call it like the Judas effect. People will test you three times and they'll push and they'll push and they'll push. And every part of your body will actually want to go back to kind of being like, oh yeah, okay, fine, I'll do it.
That's what they expect of me.
Yeah. And it's part of your identity. And I, for me, anxiety, a lot of it is about your identity. So it becomes like an identity crisis.
So it's probably the gap between your true self and the self you put out to the world.
Yes.
And the bigger that gap is, the more likely you are to suffer from anxiety. Is that part of it?
It is part of it. And I spoke about that in my first book with you. And it's that public and private self. And it's you absolutely have a private self and you don't have to share that with everybody. But it needs to be aligned with kind of your core values.
Mm.
And if you find yourself just feeling like every day is blending into the next, it's just a gentle questioning. And I don't want people to come away from it feeling bad. I actually want them to feel empowered and to go, do you know what? I'm going to actually drop that. I actually really don't like that. That actually really drains me. And just to bring an awareness in, but it's very compassionate. It's very real. And the practical side of it, and there's a whole toolbox in there, is to figure out what works best for you, because I don't know what works best for you. One person might love a walk, the next person loves a run.
Mm-hmm.
And it's up to you to figure out which one you actually really love. But they're all based on science, and it's the science of safety. It's about this inner GPS is how do I actually get back home to myself? Because when you don't feel good, you feel disconnected from yourself and others. And I suppose I'd love people to know, with, say, panic attacks, people don't believe they'll ever come back to actually how they actually felt. And when you said about being in control, I'm going to throw a little curveball in. It is about that, but it's about recognizing that
you're not always in control.
We really aren't. And yes. Part of the problem with anxiety is that sense of uncertainty. And there's so much uncertainty in the world. But what can you do to kind of bring a sense of safety back to yourself? And if that's kind of, you know, being mindful of cutting down your work and not doing it after a certain amount of time at home. Just very small things, but just questioning.
And the reassuring thing in the book is reminding people that being a little bit nervy and maybe a little bit anxious is part of being human. It's
absolutely.
It's not a smooth run in at all.
Oh, God. I mean, and I actually think we do need to do hard things.
Yes.
You know, like my kids came to the launch last night and one of them said to me today, like, well done, you did great. You were, I know you were nervous. I said, I was nervous, but I did it. And I said, and I actually told people too. And I think that's what I want. I want to be a good ancestor. I wrote the book for clients and for people, and I want a change to happen. But I also want my kids, who unfortunately now they know a lot about polyvagal theory. I'd be walking around going, this is amazing. And they're like, oh my God, will you stop talking about polyvagal theory? But I do actually want them to have those words so they can actually identify and say, actually, do you know what? This whole situation is very stimulating to me. I just need to take a little break. I'm going to go outside, calm down, come back. And it's incredibly effective.
And when you think about it, probably common sense, you know, if we actually
give
it a good bit of thought.
Yeah.
But it's there in the book. It's all too much. Alison Keating, the practical psychologist, thanks so much and congratulations
on
the book. We'll take a quick commercial break.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.